find ways to help them make sure that the programs they're creating have some chance of working right.
Non-trivial bugs occur often and can be a result of many different factors, just one of which is human error. Burnett and her collaborators work to develop new debugging and testing tools and techniques. The USIS team encourages accuracy through non-intrusive guidance and on-demand explanations that alert people to their bugs. A why not tool, which allows people to correct bugs 8 times faster, and collaborations with K-12 teachers for classroom use. Ultimately, the USIS crew makes end-user programmers work, well, less buggy. I'm Eric Phillips. Imagine That covers projects funded by the U.S. government's National Science Foundation. Federally sponsored research brought to you by you. Learn more at nsf.gov.
Imagine That. You're listening to radio station WUSB, Stony Brook, New York, 601. Time for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this hectic Tuesday afternoon. Oh, I just got into the studio 30 seconds before the news ended, and boy, it's a miracle I made it. It really is. It all started when I realized I was out of cassette tapes. I record the show because sometimes the stream doesn't work and we need a backup copy. And sometimes the tape decks here don't work, so you have to go into the studios. Oh, I'm kidding. They don't work all the time, and I have to do that every week. But the problem was that when you do an hour-long show, it's kind of hard to flip the tape, you know? If you listen to the old radio shows, the old Brain Damages many years ago, and maybe even some of the old Off the Hooks, you'll notice that in certain points, around 45, 47 minutes in, there's a slight gap. And that slight gap is when one of us remembered to flip the tape over. Because we were using... would have known in the trade as C90s, 90-minute cassettes, 45 minutes on each side. And they're usually pretty nice. They usually give you about 47 minutes on each side. I'm not quite sure why they do that, but they do. But it's a lot better if you're doing an hour-long program to use what are known as C120s, not C60s. A lot of people make that mistake. C60s have 30 minutes per side. That's not good enough. C120s have 60 minutes on each side. So those are the tapes I use. I always use 60-minute on each side tapes. That way, I don't have to flip the tape. Yeah, I can just do my radio show and know that the tape is recording and I don't have to run and flip it over or worry about forgetting and then missing vital seconds, minutes even, of the program that are lost for all eternity. And that's happened in the past, and it's resulted in much gnashing of teeth. But the problem today was that I realized I didn't have any C-120s. I was all out. So I figured, you know, I'd go to my usual supplier of C-120s. For some reason, 120s are very hard to find. Not quite sure why that is. I guess it has to do with recording albums or something, or dubbing from one thing to another. I see 110s. Those exist just to mock me. Because 110s are almost what I need. They're so close, 55 minutes per side, but my show is 60 minutes. Even with the 2-minute tip or that they give you, you know, if we got 57 minutes, something would get cut off. It's just, it's not enough. I, got to have the 120. So I went to my normal supplier, which, believe it or not, is just a normal supermarket. And I'm not going to tell you where, because I don't need people raiding my supply. I'm convinced I'm the only person in the area that goes and buys C-120s. And lo and behold, today they were all out because somebody else apparently found out about it, and they had no 120s left. So that started me on a round of retail hell, where I had to go from one place to another seeing if they had cassettes. And finally, I actually found a place. A rather big electronic outlet in the area. I don't mind saying that because they had a lot. And they actually did have the 120, so I might be going there from now on. But the problem then, first of all, getting there, everything in creation managed to stand in my way. I left with so much time. I really did. I left with so much time to spare. I was even thinking of stopping and getting a snack somewhere. I don't usually do that. And, all of a sudden, all this traffic, all this construction, people just sitting at traffic lights that do not turn at all. Literally 5 minutes just sitting at a light where there was no traffic coming in the other direction, but nobody could move because, well, that's the rule. And finally, you know, I get into this place, and of course they've moved everything. You know, the sign says cassettes are here, but they're not. Cassettes are not there. Those are CDs. I know the difference. So I had to find somebody who was in the middle of a sale, interrupt the sale pitch, ask them, where the hell are the cassettes, and find out where they were, which was someplace completely different. And then had to wait online at the checkout, where one person was having trouble with a credit card, another person, the cashier, was trying to sell the extended warranty plan, a third person thought it would be helpful if she paid in exact change, which resulted in her digging in her purse for pennies, and then dropping the pennies, and then looking for the pennies, and all the time, you should have seen the expression on my face, because the clock is ticking. I know this radio station doesn't wait for anybody, and dead air is radio's worst enemy. It's true. Okay, fine, you don't believe me? Yeah, how did that sound? Not very good, did it? Yeah, people are running around already. You know, it's... dead air makes people panic. If you turn on the radio and you hear nothing, something's wrong with the world. You can't have that. That's rule number one, no dead air. For dramatic effect, fine, you know, for a couple of seconds. But then, you know, the point had better be made or heads are going to roll. So, I'm standing there in line going insane. And then finally it's my turn, and literally there's 12 minutes left before we're on the air. And I know from experience that it's at best a 10-minute drive, and that's making all the lights. And of course my credit card wouldn't swipe properly, and I had to give them another one and sign all kinds of things, then wait for the guy at the door who goes and looks in your bag to make sure that you're getting exactly what you told the cashier you were getting 3 feet away. So somehow, throughout all of that, I still managed to at breakneck speed, make it over here, run up the stairs, get through the door, get everything set up. And that's the thing. You know, with radio, you don't know what's going on. If you had seen, it might have sounded smooth. It might have sounded smooth when the previous program ended and this program just began. But no, you know, I was throwing myself across rooms, grabbing microphones and pushing buttons and things like that. And it's... it's radio, you know? It takes a lot out of you. But I'm glad we could all make it together. I hope you're on time. I hope you remember to tune in on time. Because that's very disrespectful not to. I don't like these people just turn on the radio in the middle of a radio program. You don't show up to school in the middle of a class. Well, you probably do. You probably have no respect at all for that institution either. But this radio program, you will show up on time. All right? That's just the way it is. Those are the rules. You listen to this radio station, you play by our rules. All right? I don't think that's being unfair. It's just a degree of respect to the radio host who puts in his heart and soul to be here on time. And to stay here, not slink out early. You think I don't know about that? You think I'm stupid? I know people leave early. We can sense those receivers turning off. We can sense those connections on the internet closing. it will not be tolerated. All right, I just want to make that clear. Boy, I always wanted to be a teacher. Okay, so let's take a look at what's going on in the world. You know, today is a very interesting day because it's the night. It's the, I guess, beginning of the night because it's currently 6:11 p.m. on Tuesday night here. Tuesday, June 28th, one day after WUSB's 28th anniversary, which I think is pretty cool. In 2 years, we'll be 30. Wow, we're getting old, aren't we? Anyway, tonight is the, I guess by the time you hear this in the future, it will be known as the infamous Bush speech, where he tried to tell us how everything's going smoothly in Iraq, and don't worry, it's going to be okay. Yeah, no timetable. We don't have any idea when this is going to end, but, you know, despite the fact we went in there for reasons that were basically lies, and despite the fact that nearly 2,000 of our own people have been killed as a result, and who knows how many of the other side, despite the fact nobody knows what's going on, why we're there, despite the fact that most people, by a very wide number, think we should get out of there, don't worry. It's all going to be okay. I think that's how history will remember this speech. And, you know, it's sad, too, because with the passing of time, things change. And I just wish that everybody could go to the front page of CNN.com and look at the goofy picture of Bush that's there under the headline, Bush to give clear strategy for Iraq. I just checked it, and it's already gone. It got replaced by another story. But he just has this really humorous smirk on his face, and he's got both of his hands sort of, you know, pointing at his chest, like, what, me worry? You know, that kind of an expression. And you just realize this is the leader of the free world. My God. No wonder the free world is in so much trouble. I mean, the confidence that we don't have in him is matched equally, I think, by that expression on his face. This guy has no idea. He has no clue. That's why it's hard to, you know, to really hold him accountable because, you know, he's just so goofy and out of his element. He's being manipulated by all these people. You know, it's like one of those TV programs where somebody starts talking with a puppet. You know, they do the ventriloquism thing and they throw their voice or, you know, do as good a job as they can. And the puppet starts saying something insulting to one of the other characters. And before you know it, and this is the oldest gag in the book, one of the other characters starts getting upset, not at the person that's controlling the puppet, but the puppet itself. I can name probably about 6 shows I've seen in my life that have done this, where somebody grabs the puppet and tries to punch it or something, or someone just starts yelling at the puppet, not realizing or forgetting or whatever, you know, something completely improbable. I don't know. I've never had anybody talk to me with a puppet, so I don't really know if I would get angry at the puppet and not the person. But I guess, you know, if you realize that this guy is just a puppet for higher powers, it's really hard to direct all your anger at him. Oh, believe me, I'm plenty angry at him, but I'm a lot more angry at what makes him possible. I'm a lot more angry at the hand that's controlling his movements and the voice that's coming from someplace. I think that's where we should be focusing our anger. And anger is a good thing, all right? Anger definitely can help. It can focus you. It can make you realize that, you know, I've got something to be upset about. After my whole RNC experience last fall, I was angry for a good long time. But I realized that that anger empowered me. I was able to express myself. I was able to explain to people who didn't understand what happened, exactly what happened, get them to see. And so I think if you feel angry about the way things are going today, if you express yourself, you have a good chance of turning some minds, you know, reaching people, getting them to see something they might not ever have seen otherwise. And that's why it's so vital that we not clam up, that we not give up on this. I know so many people who say, you know, this is all just so terrible. I'm just ignoring the news. I'm not even watching the news anymore. I'm not reading papers. I'm just listening to music. I'm just doing my own thing. I don't even want to know about it. That's the worst possible thing you can do. Yeah, the news sucks. Yeah, it's horrible. But we all know that. Or at least A good number of us know that. So if we communicate amongst ourselves and communicate to other people in a non-divisive way, too, I might add. So many people like to be divisive about every little thing they do, and it causes a lot more factions to develop and a lot less power to be utilized. Reach out to those other people, even those people who you think are completely on the other side of the wall. Those are the best people to reach out to because, first of all, they need to know you're there. All right? And second of all, you might actually have a chance of reaching them. Yeah, it could be really surprising, the eyes that you open up. But it can happen. I always get into debates, online debates, in-person debates, sometimes debates with people who are actually over there right now. Lots of people who are over there right now I talk with, and they actually are a lot closer to my point of view than to someone like Bush is. But there are the occasional raging debates where, it's like speaking to somebody from another planet. It really is. People really don't see what could be wrong about invading a country that was not a threat to you and imposing your way of life on them. And that's what it is. The United States is imposing its way on another country for no reason other than we want it that way. And so you simply replace the word democracy with Christianity and you see how ugly the thing is. And that's what a lot of people feel. And you can't deny this. Yeah, there's a reason why there's an insurgency over there. Because a lot of people do not want us over there. A lot of people do not want our soldiers patrolling the streets, kicking in doors, imprisoning people. That's a valid concern. I don't really go for the suicide bombers. I really don't. I don't think that's terribly cool. But what you have to understand is desperate times call for desperate measures. And if Nazis had invaded this country, I guarantee you there would be suicide bombers. Now, am I drawing a parallel between us and Nazis? Well, yeah, I guess I am in a sense. I'm not saying that we're Nazis. I'm saying that when an occupying power invades your country, regardless of how nice they are, you want them out, and you will do whatever is possible to get them out. Now, not everybody over there agrees, obviously. There are some people who want McDonald's and, and Bush speeches and all that kind of thing. And, some people who are more moderate and just want a decent way of life. And I understand that. But that's not going to come by an occupying power. It doesn't work. Especially an occupation based on lies, based on deceiving people all around the world. No, what that calls for is action to be taken against the people responsible for that. And I think these are the questions we need to be asking ourselves as we watch Bush tonight. He's going to say, we can't give you a timetable. Because that's just not how it works. That's what the terrorist would want. And of course, he'll be speaking of the insurgents as terrorists. And what they do is pretty terrifying, I grant you. But, bombing countries is also pretty terrifying. Not an excuse, but just maybe we should try and understand what's really going on over there. He will say that if we retreat at any point, they will simply take over and impose a reign of terror. And obviously, these are things that should have been considered before going into the country. So at the very least, Bush needs to be held, and his cronies, of course, need to be held accountable for doing this, for invading a country that had no threats against us. Oh, they weren't happy with us. They weren't really that friendly. Of course, we've been bombing them for about a decade. They kind of took it the wrong way, I guess. But they weren't a threat. All right, and there are charges to be filed against people who invade countries that are not a threat to them. In fact, I think Saddam Hussein did that once, and the world wasn't very happy with him. Things need to be done. And just the fact that we are a superpower, that's got to stop meaning so much, especially to citizens here. We need to realize that we're part of a world. Yeah, we happen to be the most powerful country in the world, and that's kind of scary, especially if that power is misused. But that does not mean that we can run roughshod over the rest of the world. It does not mean that we can force the UN to live by our rules. My God, I mean, if the UN only had more guts, the things they should be doing to this country, there should be embargoes, there should be all kinds of action, there should be trials, there should be all kinds of things going on. I ask people, if you had the power to tell an international court where Bush was, would you? So that they could take him to The Hague or wherever and put him on trial. And most people I know say, yeah, without hesitation. You know, it's just like Milosevic. Not quite as brutal on a personal level, but so much more brutal on a numbers scale. The numbers of people who have died because of the lies that this administration has put forward, it's simply staggering. Oh my God. And people don't realize this. We close ourselves off. It's painful to listen to, but it has to be faced. So yeah, you know, don't ever forget that. We may be a superpower, but we're guilty of as many things as any country would be that did this. All right, let's take a look at some of the things that are going on and how this may relate. Now, I also encourage everybody to watch this speech. I want to hear your viewpoints on it. I want you to list the things that are not true, that are inaccurate, and mail them to us, otw@2600.com. Because that's what we should be doing. That's what the rest of the world is doing. And there's nothing, this is part of the whole debate I always get into, there is nothing at all unpatriotic or in any way wrong with holding this guy up to account for his actions. And forcing him to pay the penalties for doing that, as well as everybody else. And we need to discuss just how that will come about. Now, Bush's approval rating is sinking. I think it's something like 43% now believe that the war is a good idea, and something like 59%. Does that even add up? No, it doesn't, does it? It's getting close to 60% think the war is a bad idea. And that's a significant number. That's a very significant number of people who are opposed to military action. And that means that these people realize that they've been lied to, that what they were told at the beginning is not true. Now, we're going to hear things like what White House spokesman Scott McClellan said yesterday. I think we have a clear strategy for success. Yeah, Bush is going to be talking in a very specific way about what that strategy is. It's an opportunity for the American people to hear about the strategy. If he can say the word strategy, I'll be surprised. Let alone give us a strategy. He's not going to give us a strategy. Was he going to tell the strategy so that Al-Qaeda can hear it? Of course not. He's going to say, well, you know, I can't tell you too much because there are enemies among us. McClellan also said the president made it clear after September 11th, again, bringing September 11th into something that has absolutely nothing to do with it, that some will want us to grow complacent and forget about or put the attacks off as a distant memory. But it does require patience and resolve to see this struggle through to the end. We have no option but to defeat the terrorists, and the terrorists will be defeated. Oh, give me a break. What this is doing is creating more terrorists than ever before. We didn't have 2,000 of our own soldiers dead after September 11th, did we? You know, Iraq was not a hostile country in the sense that they posed any reasonable threat to the United States. Now they certainly are. And God knows how many other countries. In addition, there was a recent poll that suggested that allied nations preferred China to the United States. China! I mean, you know, their human rights record is not exactly stellar, but apparently, we're talking about Western European nations that are supposedly our friends, and they say that China has it's more pleasant to be around or has a better record than the United States. That's bad, and that's what I mean when I say it's not patriotic to criticize the things that are going on, because who has done more damage to what this country stands for? The people who tried to stop this war or the people who made this war go forward? And completely destroyed our reputation in the rest of the world. And not only for going into war, but for all the practices that we have engaged in since then. The prison camps, the torture, the blind disobedience of civilized society, of international law, of just the way things are done. Here's an interesting story. The United States is spending $50 million to build new prisons to house the thousands of suspected fighters its forces are capturing in Iraq. $50 million building new prisons in Iraq. With anti-U.S. violence in Iraq continuing to rage, American forces are now holding more than 10,000 people they classify as security detainees in their three main jails in Iraq. This is nearly double the number they held a year ago. The new constructions will give the United States the capacity to hold up to 16,000 people in Iraq. That's according to military spokesman Lieutenant Guy Rudisill. U.S. forces will build a new prison at a former military barracks in, I'm going to try to pronounce this, Sulaymaniyah. Yeah, I could say that. They're building a new prison at a former military barracks in Sulaymaniyah, which is 330 kilometers north of Baghdad. And they will add room for 2,000 more prisoners at Camp Cropper near Baghdad Airport, which right now only holds 125 detainees, including one very important one, former President Saddam Hussein. The biggest U.S.-run prison, Camp Buka, near Qazar in the south, will also be expanded to hold an additional 1,400 detainees. Do you remember when, I think about a year, it was shortly after the prisoner abuse scandal first hit. Remember that? You know, torturing prisoners, that kind of thing? Okay, when that hit, there was talk about us finally tearing down that horrible prison of Abu Ghraib. You know, the prison where Iraqis were tortured by other Iraqis, now they're tortured by Americans, kind of doesn't send a good signal, so there was talk of tearing it down. Well, that talk appears to have dissipated, because Abu Ghraib, which, as I mentioned, was Saddam's most notorious prison and became the focus of a scandal for U.S. troops, has just been expanded to house 400 more detainees and will get room for another 400. So that's 800 more people living their lives over there now. U.S. officials said after the scandal that they hope to close Abu Ghraib. Rudisill, the military spokesman, said the plan is to move prisoners from there to Cropper after that camp is expanded. The U.S.-run camps are for security detainees held by Iraqi and U.S.-led international forces as suspected insurgents. Ordinary Iraqi criminals are held in regular Iraqi jails. Rudisill said the expanding U.S.-run prison camp population in Iraq is a result of a successful military operation against the insurgency and terrorists by coalition forces and the Iraqi special forces. Write that down. You know you live in a successful society when you have more prisons because you've captured all the evil people. Of course, it doesn't explain why there's so many of them still out there. U.S. authorities in Iraq have come under harsh criticism for conditions in their jails and also for the alleged incarceration of innocent people there. In a recent report, New York-based Human Rights Watch said harsh and coercive interrogation techniques, such as subjecting detainees to painful stress positions and extended sleep deprivation, have been routinely used in detention centers throughout Iraq. The U.S. Army has said that all security detainees held by the multinational forces are considered a threat to the security and stability of Iraq. The U.S. will, according to their own statement, release detainees when they are no longer deemed a security threat, have no further intelligence value, and do not merit criminal prosecution. But, you know, there's so many of them that are still held, in fact, in Guantanamo Bay in Cuba. We keep hearing about people who are released without charges after being held for years. I mean, what kind of a society is this that can hold people for so long and not charge them and then simply release them? Because presumably, it was all a mistake. Unbelievable. Now, that story, by the way, the one I just read, came from Al Jazeera. Yes, that's right. The voice of the terrorist. Did it sound so, I don't know, so anti-American? I think it was pretty much factual. Tell me what in there is not factual. Quotes from the military? Numbers? But that story is not appearing anywhere in the U.S. media that I could find anyway, because I spent a couple of hours before the show just looking for stories about this, and that's the only place I found it. The expanding prison population, expanding prisons in Iraq, run by United States officials. How about this story? Police opened fire on a crowd of demonstrators in the southern Iraqi city of Samawa on Tuesday, wounding 7 protesters, including one man who was shot in the head. It's according to witnesses and hospital staff. 4 policemen were also injured by stones, according to doctors. Nearly 2,000 unemployed Iraqis, get this, 2,000 unemployed Iraqis were demonstrating in central Samawa because they had not been given jobs in the police. They wanted to be policemen. These are the guys who are always getting blown up. And these people in the crowd were angry because they weren't being hired to put themselves on the line. And the reaction? The police opened fire on them. The police in Iraq, who were pretty much controlled by the United States. And that's not a debatable fact. That is true. Anyone who thinks that Iraq is running its own affairs is not paying attention. Incidentally, that story came from Reuters, all right, and I haven't seen that in very many places either. The Iraqi president was meeting with Bush last week, and I thought it was interesting how, I think it was a year ago, Bush was saying how, and Rumsfeld were both saying, that Iraq is controlling its own destiny, and if they want the Americans to leave, the Americans will leave. Yet Bush is the one telling everybody that we'll stay there until the job is done. Not at the Iraqis' request, although he could probably get somebody to say that, but I thought it was just interesting how that part was just kind of skipped over. No, we're staying there until the job is over. Which I guess only leaves the question of defining just what the job is. So, it's going to be a very interesting speech. I'm not sure exactly how many people it's going to convince. Okay, here we go. Here's the poll I was looking for. 40% of those responding to the poll said they approved of Bush's handling of the war. That's according to CNN, USA Today, and Gallup. They all asked at the same time. 58% said they disapproved. And that's unbelievable. And that's why the speech is being given, too, by the way. It's interesting how the media gets to dictate the stories, but it's nothing new. These polls are released, and all of a sudden it's a crisis. Nothing's really changed in the last month, but all of a sudden these numbers are out. And before you know it, the president is giving a speech. That right away tells you public outcry does matter. It just has to be expressed. It has to be publicized. Now, where are the anti-war rallies? Where are the people marching on D.C. demanding action? Well, I guarantee you, if they were happening on a weekly, on a daily basis, you would see changes. You would see big changes. Oh, yeah, you'd see a lot of arrests. You'd see a lot of police abuse. But if you believe in something, you have to take that stand. You have to take that risk. And it's not so different than standing up for your country in some other way that you might not agree with, such as marching off to war. How about marching off to D.C. and demanding to be heard? How about that? We seem to have given up on it. And that's part of that whole covering ears and running away from the bad news that is so harmful. So, maybe Bush will inspire us tonight to get angry and stay angry. It's fascinating, too, to go through different sorts of media, and this is something anybody can do simply by going onto the internet. Now, looking at BBC, looking at the way they're reporting this story, and again, consider that England is one of the countries that's over there, actually really one of two countries that's over there in force. And they report that U.S. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld says it could take up to 12 years to defeat the Iraqi insurgency. Yeah, 12 years. How does it sound now? Let's see, 1,000 U.S. troops per year, that's 12,000 people. 12,000 of our people dying for what exactly? For what? And that's if it stays at this level, if it doesn't get worse. And I don't think very many people are predicting it's going to get better. Except those people on drugs in D.C. So anyway, this apparently is part of every officer's basic training. It's what they're told. This can take up to a dozen years. I won't come as much of a surprise to the Iraqis either. Even the optimists here in Iraq, and there are surprisingly many, do not expect life to improve for many years. That's according to the BBC. The problem is with the American public. They have simply not been prepared for this sort of long-term commitment. Why is that? I remember hearing people at the rallies saying exactly this well before the first bombs fell. How is it that a bunch of people walking in the street can get it right, and the people in government can get it so wrong? Well, I don't think the people in government got it wrong at all. I think they knew exactly what was going to happen. They knew exactly what was and was not there. And they chose to sacrifice our lives and a good part of this country. I mean, how many hundreds of billions of dollars are we going to lose because of this? Money that could be used to improve things in this country? Healthcare, infrastructure, rail lines, God knows what. There are so many things that we will do without because of this. And now, of course, we should do without because of what we've perpetrated onto this nation over there. So the answer is not very very simple, obviously. Continuing with the BBC story. In the course of just the last few days, the Bush administration and the professional military have been delivering mixed, often flatly contradictory messages. Vice President Dick Cheney said the insurgency was in its last throes. Yeah, he said that. The same week Donald Rumsfeld said it could take 12 years. Those are some long last throes. In a congressional hearing last week, General John Abizade, the U.S. Middle East commander, bravely pointed out that the violence was stable or increasing. And in Baghdad, Brigadier General Carl Hurst said recently that on many days the violence was no worse than in Los Angeles or London. Yeah, how many car bombs have gone off in Los Angeles lately? So it's not a surprise that a confused American public is asking where it all went wrong and increasingly calling for the withdrawal of American forces. And I think that's what we do have to call for. We have to call for a withdrawal because obviously it's not working. Now, does that mean that we just abandon the country and let chaos reign? You better believe it does not mean that. Because the U.S. government is going to be held accountable for what it did over there, and it's going to have to pay for that. But continued occupation is obviously not the answer. You know, I wasn't really planning on talking about Iraq tonight. I really wasn't, but just hearing about this upcoming speech just got me going, and it's so upsetting just to see all this wasted opportunity. So sad. And speaking of the BBC, I'm amazed by, you know, what they can do as far as reporting. And, you know, a lot of things I hear there I don't agree with. I don't agree with presentation a lot of times. But at least there's a chance that the news will get out, that some of the facts that I've just told you about will be heard by many millions of people because a major broadcaster is telling that particular interpretation of the facts. We don't see that nearly as much here. And I think, you know, it kind of points to the recent hassles that NPR and PBS have been having. If you've been following the news over the last couple of weeks, the Bush administration has been threatening to completely gut the budget of public broadcasting. And the reason behind this, stated or unstated, is that PBS, NPR are considered to be too liberal, too much of an agenda. Not fair enough to the conservatives, who, as we all know, have no control of the media at all in this country. Yeah. And then you look at the BBC, and these guys have a budget of over $5 billion. We're talking about, you know, PBS being gutted by losing $100 million. And BBC has billions of dollars to spend on all kinds of things. And the reason for that is because of that mandatory television licensing fee, which, you know, a lot of people think is kind of messed up. And I can sort of see that. You have a TV set, you have to pay a licensing fee to have it. And they have these people that go around with antennas and stuff in all different towns in England looking for the signal of a TV set. And when they find it and they find that it's not being paid for, the person gets fined. That's ridiculous. It's absurd, but it's British, you know. That's just the way things are over there. But you have to look at the good that comes out of this. When you have people paying the equivalent of about $125, $150 a year, mandatory, all of a sudden, you have this tremendous resource. And as a result, people are exposed to so much more. Or you can leave it in the hands of the corporations and the government and say, well, we hope that they'll give us something. And of course, we can beg for money all the time. And then you have horrible, horribly ineffective broadcasting outlets that simply are afraid to report the news in a particular style that might offend somebody, that don't have the money to really investigate things, to really put on productions. That's what you wind up having. We could have such amazing resources. I would have no problem with paying a certain amount of money and having a percentage of that money go towards something I completely disagree with. Something that made me angry, made me rant and rave. I would still happily give the money so that we could be exposed to it, so that we could think about it, so we would have the debates and the ideas. In this country, though, the mentality is that if I don't agree with it, I don't have to pay for it. And once that spreads, it's pretty much a downward spiral, and you wind up with very, very little. And that's the nature of our public broadcasting in this country today. Fortunately, it's not hard to access the rest of the world, and that's what we're going to have to do until things get a little better. Speaking of things getting a little better, well, of course, this Canada. I know not everything is perfect there, but they bring me my Canadian TV. They brought me my smart car, and you know, I got to tell you, another week of driving around in that thing, I'm getting a little sick of it. To be honest, I'm getting sick of people constantly hounding me with questions and, you know, wanting to pose, take pictures, and all that kind of thing. It's great, and you know, there's no better feeling in the world, and I mean this with all sincerity, than being able to expose somebody to something that they wouldn't have been exposed to originally. And you feel that you've gotten through to them somehow. You've expanded their horizon. Now, you can do this with books. You can do this with movies. You can do this with points of view. You can do this with all kinds of things. And in this particular case, you can do it by driving a weird-looking car around and having people learn that, wow, this is pretty cool. This really exists. And you just get people thinking and talking. That's what it's all about. So if you can figure out a way to do that in your life in any way, by all means, do whatever you have to. Anyway, speaking of Canada, Canada's Parliament was set today to approve legislation that will allow same-sex marriages across the country, despite fierce opposition from conservative legislators and religious groups. Yes, they have them up there too. But looks like they're taking a bold step here. A majority of parliamentarians support the legislation, which would make Canada only the third country after Belgium and the Netherlands to allow gay marriages. Officials said Parliament would vote at around 8 p.m. tonight. That's an hour and 15 minutes away. Hey, you know what? I'm going to watch that live on Canadian television because I can do that. I don't mean to mock you because you can't do that. I'm just saying that's pretty cool that when you have options, when you have resources. You can probably do it too. go to cbc.ca, and on the website, I'm sure there's a link somewhere to the parliamentary channel, or it's called CPAC, C-P-A-C. Maybe cpac.ca. I don't know. If you're interested, you can probably watch that too. Canada's minority Liberal government said it had to produce legislation permitting gay marriage after courts in 8 of the country's 10 provinces ruled that a ban on same-sex marriages was unconstitutional because it violated Canada's Charter on Rights and Freedoms. Wow. Church groups and the main opposition conservative party say the law is an attack on organized religion. You know, I just don't understand that. I don't understand. I mean, if they kicked in the doors of the churches and dragged people out and forced them to get married to people of the same sex, yeah, you know, maybe that's an attack on organized religion, but my God, why can't they just leave people alone? Let them live their lives. Someone explain to me how gay marriage hurts organized religion. I'd like to know. I've yet to hear the logic. The sanctity of marriage, well, you know, sanctity is subjective, all right? Someone suggested that allowing gay marriage could lead to the legalization of polygamy. That is one heck of a leap, isn't it? It really is. Gay marriage and then polygamy. How are those two connected? You know, couldn't you argue that regular marriage could also lead to polygamy? All right. Prime Minister Paul Martin has ordered his cabinet to vote for the legislation, but around 35 Liberal legislators will oppose the bill. Interesting. Canada's stance stands in contrast to that in the United States, where President Bush wants Congress to back a constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriages. The gay marriage legislation is the last item on Parliament's agenda before it breaks for the summer. Legislators are due to resume work on September 19th. It's about the time I'll be getting back from my round the world voyage, which I depart on in mid-July. I should also point out that we're not on next week on this particular radio program, as this radio station is having a reggae-thon. What that means is that we'll be playing reggae music for an entire week. And I suggest you listen and learn and have a lot of fun. I know I will be. So, yeah, we won't be on next week, but we will be on the week after that. And I think that's the last week before I actually depart. And then the shows after that will get kind of weird because I'll be broadcasting from someplace. We don't know where. Well, we sort of know where, but we don't know exactly where. Okay, and then moving back to this country, we went to Canada for a little bit. Now we're back here, back in the land of stupidity. And boy, you know, there's no better example than this. Former U.S. President Ronald Reagan has been voted the greatest American of all time by his fellow citizens. Yeah, I didn't get my ballot. Mr. Reagan, who died last year at the age of 93, topped a list of 10 contenders. He edged out Abraham Lincoln, who abolished slavery. He edged out civil rights leader Martin Luther King. He didn't exactly edge out these people because they didn't even make the top 10. Albert Einstein, Neil Armstrong. You know who edged them out, though? Oprah Winfrey. Yeah, she was number 9. Einstein and Neil Armstrong weren't even in the top 10. And that was also the highest ranking of a woman. Yes, Oprah Winfrey, the greatest American woman. Oh, my God. George Washington, the first U.S. president who is considered the father of the nation, comes in at fourth place. Reagan, number 1. Washington, number 4. Okay, I'm going to read you the order. This is very hard for me. It really is. All right. Number 1, Ronald Reagan. We already went through that. Number 2, Abraham Lincoln. Number 3, Martin Luther King. Number 4, George Washington. Number 5, Benjamin Franklin. Number 6, George W. Bush. It was going so well, and then the train just hit a rock or something and just completely derailed. George W. Bush, what is George W. Bush doing in the likes of George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, Martin Luther King, Abraham Lincoln? And, you know, Those four are sandwiched by George W. Bush and Ronald Reagan. I'm sorry, but something is just definitely amiss here. Number 7, Bill Clinton. You know, nice guy and all that. Never really had a disagreement with him that turned violent, but no, he's not a great American, I'm sorry. Bill Clinton. Elvis Presley? Come on, let's not get ridiculous here. He's number 8. Number 9, Oprah Winfrey, as we mentioned, and number 10, Franklin D. Roosevelt. More than 2.4 million Americans cast their vote by phone, text, or email in the poll organized by the Discovery Channel and AOL. Well, you know, now here's my question. Is this something that they aired on the Discovery Channel saying, call now, and AOL sent instant messages to all the people, all its minions that use their service? Is that how this happened? Because that's not exactly a fair representation of the American public, is it? No, I don't think it is. I'd like to know. If you were part of this in some way, let us know how it came about. I actually was part of a Gallup poll this weekend. I got a call. On the caller ID, it said Gallup Inc., so I figured, why not? And a big mistake, because it was a poll about alcohol for some reason. Asking all these questions about every brand of alcohol there was, and, you know, what kind of scotch have you heard of? Have you heard advertising for this? Is the price of whiskey fair to you? When do you drink? When's the last time you drank? Do you drink with friends? Do you drink by yourself? It went on for a half hour like this. And, you know, I'm not a professional drinker by any stretch of the imagination. I don't remember names and styles and things like that, so I don't know how helpful I was. I figured, you know, I'd experience this to see what the Gallup poll was like, but to be honest, I think heavy drinking is probably a little better. So, yeah, this was a Discovery Channel AOL poll, which I imagine is probably a lot easier to fill out. Some observers suggest the image of Mr. Reagan, who was criticized as an intellectual lightweight during his presidency, has been enhanced following his death. Actually, it's been enhanced by his death, as millions of Americans cast a rose-tinted look back on his presidency. Well, you know, there's no roses coming from my perspective, I'll tell you that right now. And I can go on for a very long time about that, but I won't because we're running out of time. And it seems I've spent the entire hour ranting about things that I really didn't want to rant about, but that's just the way it goes sometimes. It's a lot to rant about. There really is. Again, our email address is otw@2600.com. And we'd like to hear from you. And we do read your emails. In fact, we're going to read a couple right now. Here's an anonymous one. The reason for the news talking about Saddam like they were, we were talking about the story last week, where we were talking about what kind of potato chips Saddam Hussein liked, because that's what was being reported in the news. The reason for that, according to this listener, it should be pretty obvious, they're trying to bring him down to our level. Instead of being that ultra-dangerous world dictator who could destroy everything, now he's just some grumpy old guy who eats Doritos like a pig and has chauvinistic attitudes towards women. It's pretty sad, really. It's a really low and pathetic attempt at trying to make him look like an idiot to the American public. You don't get to be a dictator by being stupid, so the news has to do whatever they can to make us write him off as some old guy. Interesting, yeah, and that's probably the way it is, but it would have been nice if they did that before we invaded their country. We realized that he was just this crazy old guy eating Doritos. On your program Off the Wall, you said Americans couldn't get access to BBC's The World. In fact, you can stream the programs from their website, www.theworld.org. That's a new one. I didn't know about that one. Theworld.org. Or you can buy a downloadable subscription from www.audible.com. They've been covering an arrest warrant issued by the Italian government against 13 Americans, including members of the CIA, for kidnapping an Islamic imam in Italy. Did you hear about this? Probably not. They suspected him of being involved in terrorist activities and seemed to feel no need to go through the normal extradition processes. I heard this story in foreign media about how he was taken to another country and tortured, courtesy of the American government. Yeah, and the Italians are pressing charges, as well they should. The American media seems strangely quiet on the issue. The internet grants access to a great variety of international news outlets to anyone interested. Signed, Ivy. Thanks very much for that report, Ivy. And finally, I was catching up on my Off the Wall and Off the Hook this week, and I was wondering what the ending music was that you had that had the line, nothing's going to stop the flow. Ah, yes. I can't remember which show it was on. I tend to listen to both on the same day, and I've lost the MP3. Well, you know, they're always on our website. You can never quite lose them. I'm searching for the lyric. It has not helped. Signed, Howard. Well, Howard, that comes from a band known as Folk Implosion. That's right, and it's one of my favorite songs, actually. In fact, we use it sometimes for the outro here, and I think maybe we'll use it tonight for the outro, since, yeah, why not, since we're talking about it. And again, we won't be back next week, but we will be back in 2 weeks, and by then we'll know if New York didn't get the Olympics, as I'm hoping they don't. We'll know what Bush said tonight. And we'll know a lot more, probably. We'll see you then. Good night.
Hi, this is Albert Collins. When I'm out in Stony Brook, I'll be listening to WUSB FM station. When I want to listen to some good blues, that's the station you tune into.